couple years ago, I think. I love this rendition of the Psalms. It's very difficult to read some of the wording in the Psalms today because it's written in a different time with a different theological understanding of who God is. This is absolutely beautiful, and every day when I do the Mass readings, I take this and I just look the Psalm up in here and I read it from here. It's really writing from a contemplative, cosmic understanding of the whole creation and being the beloved of God. So I just recommend that.
Her name
is Nancy Merrill, M-E-R-R-I-L-L, and it's called Psalms for Praying. And if you want a good book on a deepening of the understanding of silence, there's a book with just that name, Silence, by Robert Sardello, S-A-R-D-E-L-L-O. I'm not sure where you can get that, but that is what took me into a deeper understanding of silence. So, I'd like to say a little bit about one of the things about silence that called contemplative prayer or sensitive prayer, whatever you want to call it, and there are, like I say, many different levels at which people do it. It's not just to relieve stress, to become more centered, but there is a depth to it that is what's calling all of us, I think. And it's in that place where we're rooted and grounded in the love of God and that deep that we come to be in union with God, the true self. As Richard Rohr said, we can't think ourselves into union with God. We have to experience it. So you can say all the words about it, describe it however you want, read about it in the book, read about the mystic's experience of it. But to me, the great desire is to experience what that's like. And once you do, life is never the same. And this is what when I was meditating on the baptism of Jesus in the Jordan, is when I had what I would call an experience of no boundaries, of union. I wasn't lost. I was still me, but I was lost in this union. Once you, and it was just like a whiff. I mean, it's not like it was stabbed and bells rang. It just went through me. Once you experience. And for me, once I experienced that, I went looking for it, wherever I could find it. And it was what initially I called it an experience of universal salvation. That's what I called it for myself initially. And I went looking for it everywhere in the Catholic tradition. I finally had to start reading Ken Wilber and people outside the tradition because I couldn't find anything. And then I went back to school at LMU. And one of my professors, because of the way I was always talking, said to me, have you ever read Teilhard de Chardin? And I said, no. And he said, well, I think you'd like his work. So I wrote my thesis on him. And because evolution opened it up for him, it opened it up for me. I like to say that there are three main components to a healthy spirituality. We've talked about this here before. My story, our story, and the story in conversation with one another. In conversation with one another, a healthy spirituality is made up of those. You take one of those out and somewhere there's a dysfunction. But when I came into Word and Life, the story for me was the 2,000-year story of Jesus. That's what it was when I first came in. And then the more I got into Bible study, no, it's bigger than that. It's the 5,000-year Judeo-Christian story. That's the story, capital H. Well, no. It's a 13-billion-year story. 13-billion-year story. But we're primarily today in Christianity still living out of too small a story for the 21st century. This is why the young people can't breathe in it. So, I'm very interested in evolving Catholicism, growing Catholicism, not leaving it behind, but growing it to its full potential in the world. We talked about this, how Catholicism, if you want to use the image of a tree, has become pot-bound. We have a deep-rooted tradition, but it's pot-bound. The container it's in is too small, and the tree can't flourish out into the world. So we need a larger container so the tree can flourish. So that, you know, the roots in the tree, the roots go down, the tree gets bigger. So here's my image. Those of you who've been coming here have seen this before. But it's the best I can do to try and explain this all inclusivity. See this little ball? See all these red tips out here on the edge? They all come from a sense that they're already starting to expand from this central red ball. This is the first flaring out. This is the great love that brought everything into being. This is the passion and eroticism of the relationality of God and self-emptying, self-giving. And it gives a whole new meaning to the Big Bang. And then it flares out into the world. Okay. And every single part retains in its memory the intensity that gave birth to it. We all are a part of that original. We know it. It lives in us like dynamite. And so how do we get back there? Well, we can't go back. We can start to connect from center to center, and we'll feel it grow. It will get stronger. It will get bigger. We'll be getting back to where we started, and boom! A new heaven and a new earth. But we've got to connect all the parts. You get it? So the old story, Jesus is the second person of the Blessed Trinity, and he's not God. I mean, we've got to get a new story. The miracle on the Hudson. He walks the plane looking for those who are left. Well, is that one worthy? Should I go and see if that one, you know, should be saved? I mean, he brought the ship in with everybody. We live in a... To me, it's writ large. We live in what they call a fine-tuned universe, fine-tuned to bring us all through up until this point. This pilot had to bring this plane down with four things operating simultaneously. The nose had to be just slightly up. The wings had to be perfectly parallel. The rate of speed descent had to be just so, and the speed of descent. And all four of those things had to happen at one time. And he knew he could do it. We are co-creating this, and we can do this. And we can bring everybody through. And in my mind, it's not about the ship making it through. It's that everybody gets through. You know. So, anyhow, that's where I am right now. I'm exploring, actually moving out into the field of conscious evolution, which contains half the people are former Catholics, and I'm finding a conversation with them that's becoming very meaningful. I almost feel like the apostle to the Gentiles, because actually they left Catholicism because it wasn't big enough, but they left their roots. So I'm in conversation with them, and so they're flowering a tree, the global work they're doing. This is the mother of all divorces is God in the world. This is what Tehar did for me, brought God and the world back together. And so this is the great tree of the flowering conscious evolution tradition. The conscious evolution movement is saying we have awakened to the fact that we are contributing to our future. And so what does Catholicism have to offer that? That's what I'm looking at right now. So that's what I'm saying. So now I'd like to take your comments or questions about anything.
I end up frequently watching some of the science programs, Discovery Channel, National Geographic, and some on history. They've been doing a whole series on the universe and where the thinking of the cosmic physicists is going, and they say it isn't just a universe, it's a multiverse, and that it looks like, in many ways, with string theory, I can't begin to understand it all, but that There are many universes, infinitely, and it goes on. And that our sitting here, we're sitting here in other universes, maybe a little bit different. Maybe one member of the group is not here, but this is the fecundity of our understanding of God, because that God is the more. He is beyond. He, it, she. I find in this tremendous source of spiritual. And like when I'm sitting here watching these programs, I'm just going, wow. This is my response to it, that it keeps going on. And what part of it also is, what I marvel at is the ability of humans to think so far beyond the visual horizon, that we need to keep going beyond and make our horizons bigger. And it comes back down to the interrelatedness then of everything within this universe and within the multiverses. That it's all interrelated. And one last comment. The thing that they talk about electrons, the possibility, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, an electron, the same electron can be several different places. And has to be. And all of these electrons know what's going on. Well,
you take two heart cells and you place them in different petri dishes, that they'll eventually find a common beam. Or if you divide a heart cell, the two, and separate them from one end of the country to the other, they will be in unison. So there, science is saying this. So there is a field of what they call non-local communication that happens instantaneously. And to me, this is just another way of talking about God. Anyhow, thank you. That's great. Thank you for those comments. Wonderful. Anybody else?
The thoughts that talked about really to that part of your talk, which was just so wonderful, the quotation from von Balthasar. Yes, the idea of God going, of Jesus going into the place of, well, the self-absorbed narcissistic. Mm-hmm. We can think of it, if we want to look at it cosmically, as maybe dark matter. Mm-hmm. That theme, which I would agree with you, I think is perhaps sort of central to our spirituality, of being capable of having empathy for that which has no empathy, for others or for itself. One of the things that I've been in pursuit of is trying to find where this theme is besides in Christianity. And I'd like to offer two places, and you might pursue them because they're too involved to comment on here. But one of them is one of the most ancient myths we have, and it's Inanna. Inanna. It's a myth that comes out actually out of the...
Inanna.
And there are loads of books on the myth of Inanna. One is Uncursing the Darkness. Mm-hmm. Uncursing the Darkness. She is her myth we have is on cuneiform tablets, and it goes back to the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And it's sort of a pair with the myth of Gilgamesh that we know more about than Inanna. But Inanna has been really worked a great deal about her descent into hell. The notion of descent into hell is much older than the Christian story. And a descent, and it it talks about this idea, I think, in a pretty radical way. So that's one story. The other story is one that you might have seen on television or on movies at Netflix, and it's The Weeping Camel. And the story of The Weeping Camel is a National Geographic documentary that has been sort of like put into a story form. And it tells us about this mother camel who absolutely rejected its child. And the question is, who do we, to heal this, who do we give compassion to? You know? And the answer is that it might be good to give compassion to the, you know, to the baby albino camel, but that's not going to give him healing. The compassion has to be given to the mother camel who did the rejecting. And I find this extremely valuable because it says that those parts of us that are sort of corrupt and narcissistic, they have to be held with a certain amount of compassion. And I heard that resonate. Elaborating on that.
Thank you. Actually, when I first read that description of narcissism, I swatted several people I knew into it. But then I had to look at this now and think about where it was inside myself because I was just projecting. But
recognize it in others because we've already lived it.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to mention about Inanna. I think if you looked on Amazon, for example, there would be. If you just looked at her name, there are lots of books about her, and it's a fascinating story. And it's all about stripping away everything, and there she is, and alone in the dark, naked. And it's really good, especially for women.
The power of myth, power of story, just keeps coming back to me. Stories are important.
And this whole thing also, if you guys haven't seen Hancock, believe it or not, there's a lot to that movie when you talk about all this and the connection that is between people.
Several years ago, Michael Moore was the first one. I think some of the people here. Michael Moore, when he talked, he has an overhead projector. He starts the universe. And that is so powerful because he said, I realize how small we are in this picture. And he shows various pictures of the universe. And he starts off, and that puts you in the right mood. Because right away you think bigger.
There's another book recently published which implicitly but not explicitly shows how God has been involved throughout for millennia. And it's by Kitty Ferguson. And it's called Pythagoras and the Chords of Music. And when you really see in it how God has been speaking to us, as it says in the book of Hebrews, that in different ways and at different times.
Thank you. Pythagoras and the Chords of
Music. Kitty Ferguson. The title may not be accurate, but the first word is Pythagoras. It's Kitty Ferguson.
Okay. Great. Jimmy.
Ellis, I was struck by your words that in your conscious evolution exploration, how many had Catholic roots. And that was partly what inspired Word in Life was when I got into the Bible Fellowship, there were at least a third had Catholic roots or were practicing Catholics and were searching for that next step that we didn't have in the church. And I thought that was so interesting because then here you are taking Word in Life forward and now it's happening again in that Catholic
church. That's interesting, yeah. Yeah, there was one, I went to a meeting last week of the Association of Global New Thought, And the woman that organized the meeting was a pastor at the Unity Church in San Diego. They have 1,500 members. She thinks 80% of them are former Catholics.
Wow.
So it's interesting to, you can you never leave your Catholic.
Yes.
I mean, and I, that's why I think there's always an attraction if somebody can make you get more universal Catholic for you.
How can we
root?
Well, you make the roots, you find the larger container, and the roots will grow. whenever you transplant something into a larger container, it goes into shock initially. But eventually it starts finding its roots. And to me, the larger container is, it's very difficult for the institutional church to embrace the evolutionary story because it changes how we interpret the meaning of creation, redemption, incarnation, and it becomes very threatening to the system as it's set up and the whole understanding of good and evil. And I think they feel that something would be lost when in fact so much would be gained. They would do anything if they truly loved the church. We gained. The church would, like I say, it's full flowering in the world. What happens? So we just need to keep telling a larger story, I think. Yeah, that's a question. Oh.
Well, there was a statistic a couple of years ago that the second largest religious group in country was lapsed Catholics.
I said that too. I mean, there's something like 1.6 billion Catholics. You know, I'm thinking if you can raise the level of consciousness of Catholics into this larger story, the critical threshold of what it will take for us to do a whole leap transformation of consciousness, that critical level would be reached if we could get that deep-rooted Catholic, and actually the deep-rooted Catholic tradition is our mystical tradition. It's all the mystics who had an understanding of God and the world being, together and not separate. But it's been marginalized within the tradition. But that's the experience of Jesus. That's the experience of Paul. That's the experience of our mystics and our saints. But it gets marginalized because it's not a rational, logical tradition that you can put into a box, and it's paradoxical.
I just want to tell a little story within that context. In Louvain in Belgium, they have a university, and now it's the fancy student quarters, but that's called Le Béguinage, and the Beguines were single women whom the church was not approving of. They had the choice between going in the cloister or getting married. And many, some were widows and had children. They said, no, we feel we can live a full life as independent women. And they were shunned. And so they started a silent prayer and a practice of contemplative living. And they had such a drawing, people were so drawn to these women, that the church became extremely alarmed. And they started threatening to take away all kinds of freedoms from them, to go to church. They finally reached a compromise, but the church was threatened, felt extremely threatened by their intense spirituality. Now, that is something to think about.
This is why we're all called to use our gifts and talents to, further God's work in the world, especially in American style in the world. So wherever that takes us, for me, it's definitely taken me into this larger context. And going out into groups that, aren't Catholic. I mean, I've been a Catholic all my life. It really feels to me a lot like it must have been for Peter or for St. Paul when you see the Spirit working outside what ordinarily you would think. I mean, these people are spiritual, and I mean, the first time I got into one of these meetings and saw how they were working globally, and I think they do lack the deep rooted foundational sense, but I was really humbled quite a bit, just because and I thought, as a Catholic, we had all fullness of truth, which I think we do, but it's somebody else would reach that conclusion without having to come through the Catholic tradition was amazing to me and very humbling. And once I actually moved out into this larger context, this evolutionary story, I like to tell the story. You can't go back. Once you know what you know, or there's no going back. And I have to say, the story that I heard, I don't know who told it to me, about the woman that was due to give birth, and she went into labor, and there was a storm, and her neighbor came over because the electricity went out, and she couldn't get to the hospital, and so she had a 5-year-old daughter, and the fellow was helping her to deliver this baby, so he gave the 5-year-old a flashlight to hold so he could see to help the mother, standing there wide-eyed. So the baby is birthed finally, and the man gives it a whack, so the baby starts to cry, and the little girl's like this, and he says, well, what do you think about that, Sally? And she said, well, I think you should whack him again because he shouldn't have crawled in there in the first place. All of you here are not afraid to grow and ask questions. And how can I not believe in evolution? But I'm seeing the evolution of word and light. My gosh, when we first started, we met in these small groups because we didn't even know how to talk about God as Catholics. We weren't brought up that way. And so we had these little small groups where we could get enough courage to maybe ask a question. And now here you are, just from everywhere, challenging questions that. Definitely, we have evolved, and thank God for all of you.
I would just like, when you said that you can't go back, it, narcissistically, I also have to tell my story. But I was raised as a nominal Christian in a congregational church, and I rejected God for a long time, and a lot of you probably know this about me. And then due to some surgery, I went to an adult ed class to learn about pain management. And from pain management, I went into the Theravada Buddhist tradition. And then from there, I went into Jungian psychology. And from there, I decided to try to get back into my Christian roots, to go back into the Congregational Church. And they were wonderful people. Several are here. They are marvelous people. But it was too small, and it's true. And word and life allows me to speak up, and you don't, it's big. It's just, I love this thing about multi-universes. Is there multi-universe or whatever it's called? It's just so true.
Well, Barbara Marx Hubbard says we are the universe in person, and so. We are multiple universes, and we're all unique, and so, we're all existing, but we're all different, and even when we speak, we're all in different places where I'm saying what I'm saying, but you're hearing what you're hearing, not necessarily what I'm saying, and so, we do live, there is something to that, so it's pretty exciting, actually, and, one of the things that is coming alive for me, and I love my Catholic tradition. I just love it because I found everything in Catholicism that I was looking for. And the deep relationship with God, the bigness of God. But Catholicism, capital C, points to something larger than itself. All religion points to something larger than itself. There'll come a time when we shouldn't need formal religion, because what formal religion points to, and that is that all of life is sacred, then we won't need formal religion because we will understand the sacramentality of all of life. And it's the same way with our sacraments. The sacraments are rituals to pull out a dimension to life that is holy and sacred so we can see what it looks like But then go and make every meal holy. Mm-hmm. Make every act of forgiveness a sacrament, that when we forgive others. And so, in my mind, what happens is, and what I believe is true, all of life is ritual. Mm-hmm. And if we thought that everything we did was holy, from preparing a meal, if we really put our attention and intention into the food, where it came from, who grew it, the seeds, or even into cleaning the house, or whatever mundane thing, to taking care of the elderly, everything is holy. And that's what ritual points to. So even eventually we shouldn't need specific rituals, because we're doing ritual every minute. Do you understand? I mean, that's the far out vision. And so, but we have to get there. But we need somebody in front saying that this is what we're moving towards. And then inviting and encouraging us moving towards it. So,
there's a popular movement, Alice, I'm sure you're aware of, that's called New Age Spirituality. It often gets badmouthed by people who are in more organized forums of religion. Is there any way that what you're talking about reflects on or is in conversation with this so-called New Age spirituality? Or what do you think about that?
Well, New Age spirituality, wow, what do you mean by that? So broad, can include any number of things. People in the conscious evolution movement do not consider them to be a part of the New Age in the sense of nobody that I've met there is, and not that I don't think there's some truth in channeling or stones or astrology. I mean, God is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, for me, I don't dismiss anything. I'm willing to listen to everything because there's something in everything of God. And so what I do is listen. I'm not in a New Age. The evolution of consciousness movement is something different, and I don't know how to really answer that with New Age, but I would say I'm not resistant to listening to anything that comes my way, and pretty much I make choices about this is appealing to me and I'm going to move in this direction, or no, this isn't going to nourish and feed, you know, the faith that I feel I'm being called to. So I make my choices along those lines, but I don't want to make sure I never throw out the baby with the bathwater. There might be an element in some of all of it that's going to feed and nourish my own faith life. And so I try to listen to what's happening inside myself when I'm listening to somebody else and see if, in fact, this is what happened with Barbara Marks Hubbard. When I heard her speak, something in me was so attracted to what she was saying, because I call her a Catholic, in small C Catholic. She didn't come from this capital C Catholic tradition, but she's what capital C calls and points to. She has a universality in her vision. And so what I found, I was attracted to that, not that I jumped on the bandwagon and everything she does or everything she says or everybody in the movement, but I've just been in conversation with her, and what we're giving each other is exactly what I've been talking about. She has the vision, but I've got the deep-rooted tradition that's separated, and we're trying to bring those together. She's actually wanting me to speak at conferences and bring a Catholicism, or the understanding of what she calls evolving Catholics, evolving the world, that's her title, into the conversation with the conscious evolution movement. And I'm finding that to be exciting, because I can bring the best of Catholicism up into the larger context and maybe heal a division that's there. But New Age is a broad, broad category, and I wouldn't embrace
a label.
Everything in it. And I think it's really largely used as a label to discredit people. If somebody goes, oh, well, you know, she's New Age. Well, so that way we don't have to think about it. She's in this category over here, and it's discredited. Joanne?
Alice, going back to this New Age question that Tom had asked, Ken Wilber is pretty good about this question. He, like Richard Rohr, says everything belongs. We're not going to X off people because they label themselves New Age, or maybe somebody else labels them New Age. But he is insistent, and I've come to agree with him, that some folks and some thinking is more evolved than other thinking. And you need to discern that which is a more evolved way of looking at life, looking at the universe. And that kind of answers that question for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to shun people who label themselves New Age, but I'm going to take a look at it. Mm-hmm.
That's a very good approach.
What are the aspects of Catholicism that you're bringing to Barbara?
Well, I think it feeds in the deep-rooted tradition of everything belongs. You know, they have a sense of the whole and all the parts working together for the whole, and they have a sense that we participate in our future, the co-creation of our future. There's a lot of, and they actually, to me, have a much more cosmic sense of what the Eucharist and communion is all about. You know, so I think we can be in conversation with each other. I think the religious traditions have certain language about the holy that I find lacking. First of all, science to me, even, okay, when I found this description of this, what they call the Akashic field, this Irvin Laszlo came up with this description, and Akasha is a Sanskrit word that means all-pervasive space. He's a scientist and a philosopher, and so he comes up with this Akashic field, the womb from which everything emanates, in which everything is manifested, and to which all things ultimately return. But his description of it as a field, of an informational field, a field of memory, and he goes on, and I love it, okay? But it's cold. Okay, so science without religion is cold. It doesn't have a heart. And so I think religion can bring a heart into it, into these discussions. So this is love. This is about love, okay? So it's a different language, and I think religion has an elevated, more profound language to give to what's happening. That's my sense. I don't, I'm not sure.
No. I think that idea that religion has, has heart, is inextricably bound up with stories.
Yes.
And so I felt some alarm when you talked a little earlier that we could go beyond what I heard story. Mm-hmm. I don't think we get to go beyond. I think we will, somewhat when you were doing this, it seemed so conceptual, as opposed to the need to always sort of go back again to story because of the particular, because of the incarnation component of it. And I guess if I have some difficulty with, when I looked into Barbara Marks Hubbard some time back, is that there isn't enough recognition of what your whole topic is today, of Holy Saturdays, which is about the dark matter, about the sort of the need to go down into, that dark place that has a stripping to it, and then reborn to come back out of it again. I'm not sure where she is now because I touched her about 10 years ago.
And they're growing too. Nothing remains static in there.
And nothing like it, but not being able to succeed with something you want to do teaches us personally about that, that pulse to go back to nothingness again and finding that in nothingness something else is born that could not have been achieved with a straight arrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all through the conscious evolution movement. And, uh-huh. Yes, and they're growing in an understanding, and their science is actually science is actually starting to put language on what I would call mystical experience. I mean, they're starting to almost validate it in the scientific arena. So they're thinking through all these things too. And you know, what you're saying is right. You know, it's all about where we're being called to be and how, as Joanna was saying, how we grow and what nourishes us. And so this is why I've said to people, and a lot of people are resistant to Barbara's work in the conscious evolution movement. I'm not advocating anybody go, you know, follow. I'm just saying for me, it's a path for right now. And I trust God enough to know that when it's boundaries for myself. So it's a personal thing, and I'm not asking, you know, anybody else to embrace it. I'm trying to describe what it has brought for me and what it has done for me.
And it's great of you to bring that here, because then you have people reacting to you, which is also part of it.
And that's okay. That's fine. Sure, and sure. I'm asking you to hold to your own. Do you think I could read one? I can end with this sure. reading from. Okay, this is where I was going. Just it'll bring it nicely, I think, to a close. Here we go. It's called Now is the Time. It's by Hafiz. Now is the time to know that all you do is sacred. Now why not consider a lasting truce with yourself and God? Now is the time to understand that all your ideas of right and wrong were just a child's training wheels to be laid aside when you can finally live with veracity and love. Hafiz is a divine envoy whom the Beloved has written a holy message upon. My dear, please tell me, why do you still throw sticks at your heart and God? What is it in that sweet voice inside that incites you to fear? Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and every action is sacred. This is the time for you to deeply compute the impossibility there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything you do is sacred. Thank you.